Bag huge savings on your painting projects at Menards. From your kitchen and bath to doors and trim, and even your ceilings, Dutch Boy has the perfect choice for your painting projects. Dutch Boy's DuraFighter is a tough paint and primer that provides great scrub resistance and durability. DuraFighter interior paint starts at $27.75 a gallon. Get an additional 15% savings on all Dutch Boy paints when you put it in the bag. See store for complete details.
Save big money at Menards.
We're here at Menards Bag Sale, asking shoppers what they're putting in the bag to get 15% off.
Paint.
Batteries.
Tools.
Toilet paper.
Extension cords. Grocery items.
Hardware for my cabinets.
Snack items. Crackers and some canned goods stuff.
Shop vac supplies.
Toothpaste. Cereal. Coffee. Dog treats. I've got a lot of stuff to grab.
The list goes on, but the sale ends January 24th. Hurry in for Menards 15% off bag sale. See store for complete details.
Save big money at Menards.
Agbabola,
how much is money?
It's nothing.
Ballin', ballin'.
Alapa.
Premium or nothing.
Them or nothing.
Now you know.
Now you know.
Now you know.
Now you know.
Level up and
get
Hi. We're back on another wonderful episode of Couch Chronicles.
Yes,
welcome to the couch.
Yes,
do we got
back.
Some new merch?
Ooh.
Hey.
Yes, we do have some new merch.
We got some new merch. Mm-hmm.
So, ladies, instead of mindfulness, we haven't done a check-in in a while.
Sure.
Just to see how we're doing, what's been going on, what's been vibing. Summer's ending. Mm-hmm. And, you know, what's been good, fam?
What has been good? Honestly, the transition into fall is definitely one that is already feeling claustrophobic and cumbersome for me. I'm not even going to lie. I'm feeling like stuff is starting to pile up and I'm not able to see the light. But, you know, we're trying to clear some stuff off the plate.
But what is it about fall, you think, for you? That just, what is your body preparing for?
Hibernation. Yes. Think exactly. I was gonna say less sun, a lot more. I just think there's just more stress that comes with the fall in general. Yeah. You have the holidays that are coming up.
Mm-hmm.
You have the. I don't have any little ones, but when school starts, I find that also kind of creates more stress because my clients feel the higher demand.
Mm-hmm.
The parents that I work with, they feel like the discomfort, or I guess the juggling act of trying to handle their schedules. And so I feel like I just kind of noticed that as well too. And I'm a summer person. My birthday's in the summer. There's more sun during the summer. Like, and so I very much am like a flower. And so it feels like I'm going into the part of like my petals are falling off and I want to go into myself and sleep. Not gonna lie, that's what it's feeling like.
We know we dread that part of the summer. What about you, love?
Same.
I am a water girl,
but I'm a fall girl too. Like, I really enjoy like the layers and like the getting cozy of fall. But I've also found that like as I grow in my career, fall time can be very busy. It's conference time.
Yeah.
There's lots of different speaking engagements, things that are going on. On top of, you know, my clients, like Stephanie said, needing to shift their routines, changes happening. So I'm in a transitional time and an exciting time. I'm really looking forward to the fall. I've got some exciting things happening in my life.
You
so.
Do.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Exciting. Good to you.
What about you?
You know, I love me a summer because I'm with you. I think summer's the best because my birthday's in the summer. So I'm here with it. But I'm very excited. I think that as the fall for me, it's like a beginning of like planning coming into action this year. So just have like really focused on grounding myself a little bit more and like spiritually just like spending time praying, meditating, and at the same time, what to Tyler's point, like going to some conferences. I have two great workshops. If you haven't, you go to Guidance of Hope Soul Counseling, you'll find those workshops. Yes. But I'm excited about the workshop. I'm just excited to teach and learn. You yeah. know what I mean? From clients, from attending conferences, from attending, from, you know, engaging in the workshops that I'm putting together. So for me, fall is great. I don't like the weather, I always say. America, the deception mm-hmm. of the sun can be out, but when it gets to that 30 and 40 degrees,
oh yeah,
you're thinking you're walking into sunshine, but you're walking into a whole different thing.
Yeah, the fridge.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And you know, as I'm aging, I hate to say this shit, it's so horrible, but my bones feel the cold.
Yeah.
And it's not
definitely favorable. Feeling that chill.
It's not
deep
favorable.
Within.
No, yeah, no. So that's the only thing. I don't mind the fall in transition because I love how outside looks. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I love how the colors change. When we get to the winter, yeah, I'm not, that's not my religion.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think I also had a little bit of a moment as you were talking where I like, the fall time for me, I think, mm-hmm. is coming off of a peak, yeah. right? So for me, during the summer, that's when my birthday is. That's when I'm more outside. Mm-hmm. That's when I'm more mm-hmm. engaged yeah. in like social activities and Facts. Different things like that. And so it feels like the peak is mm-hmm. like the summertime. And then the fall is that kind of like downward, mm-hmm. not spiral, but just that downward slope that happens yeah. after you've reached like exactly. a very enjoyable or exciting right. kind of like time.
Agreed.
And so I think I'm feeling that just kind of like just downward
down, yeah.
kind of like compression.
The high is coming
or,
down.
Exactly. Yeah. And that is just something I feel like every year I mm-hmm. always experience is just like this kind of September, October time being mm-hmm. more of a slower yeah. recovery mm-hmm. kind of moment. And then of course the holidays is then that kind of that, peak that again, we end
brings
the
it
year
high.
With.
Yeah, cool. All right. Before we get into our topic, we do want to put a disclaimer that we are going to be talking about something that's sensitive and that could also be triggering. So this is not something like if you have kids, you might not want to have them around. If you yourself, it might also be triggering and sensitive to you. So we just want to put a disclaimer that be very mindful as we're engaging in this conversation, that if you need to step away, if it becomes too much, just do so. Yeah. And also, we don't think it's appropriate to discuss around younger children.
Without at least, you know, having a conversation with them first. Because we will be talking about suicide. We'll yes. be talking about some of the more sensitive topics that come around mental health during yeah. this episode. Yeah. So yeah. we just want to make sure you guys are prepared and ready for the conversation. So let's jump into it. What are we yeah. talking about?
Yeah. I would just definitely say, too, that, like, obviously this month is Suicide Prevention Month as well. Yeah. And though it is a heavy topic, it's definitely a necessary topic to talk about yeah. more, especially amongst people of color. So yeah. though it is heavy, I am excited to share and mm-hmm. learn mm-hmm. from you all. And also, yeah, hopefully, you know, give our audience some perspective as well.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, love. So what are we talking about?
All right. So we are going to be talking more about therapy and AI. I don't mm-hmm. know if you all have heard, but more recently, a 16-year-old boy died from suicide this past April, and his parents are filing a wrongful lawsuit against, in San Francisco against OpenAI and its CEO. Mm-hmm. Some of the allegations in the lawsuit that the teen had been communicating with ChatGPT for months, disclosing suicidal thoughts and emotional mm-hmm. distress. They also say that the chatbot validated or normalized his ideas for self-harm rather than discouraging them. And there were allegations that the chatbot also provided detailed information on methods for self-harm, eventually resulting in him unaliving himself. Mm-hmm. So lots to unpack there. That's definitely exploring yeah. more about how the AI and tech world is changing mm-hmm. the shape of mental health and also exploring a little bit more
yeah.
about suicide and suicide prevention.
Yeah.
So, mm-hmm. yeah, just even starting there, mm-hmm. why has ChatGPT been something that more people are turning to for mental health? Advice.
I think, first of all, this story for me is definitely heartbreaking,
yeah.
you know, as a parent and also working with the, you know, we work with youth before too. So I think that the younger generation feel like they always want that secrecy or that someone that's like their person and their friend that they have accessibility to. And I think that ChatGPT or OpenAI give that accessible, like that buddy system or that friend that they can confide in, right? When they're vulnerable. Because sometimes, you know, talking to a friend, telling them your deepest secret, it doesn't feel safe. You know what I mean? And if you have children also, who teenagers who are isolated and don't have that friend network, or their home is chaotic, or they don't have that relationship, I think they found comfort in online has always been like me and a friend. You know what I mean? Me and somebody. So to me, I think that's why it's become more accessible, especially where you hear stories like, oh, people are dating, you know, you know, AI can like be someone that is your companion or tell you what you want to hear about yourself, make you feel good.
Yeah.
So if I have a plan, I think it's just make, you know, about not wanting to live anymore. Oh, I know the person that can understand is AI. I think people, teenagers, their brain, I think, are not fully developed to understand like, this is not a real system. This system is not
the critical thinking.
Yeah. And I don't think that, I just don't think they know like the full impact of what it is. My issue is also with ChatGPT and the lack of safety.
I mean, there's safety precautions that are on there. Like, I want to like piggyback on the fact that like my heart goes out to this family.
Yeah.
And, you know, technology and AI is just this innovative and like this like trailblazing type of thing. It really took us by storm. I would say like over the last 5 to 7 years, things have really kind of blown up in that arena. Like, I think that COVID, that year, year and a half of like isolation where a lot of folks were not able to kind of like venture outside of their homes or like find community, it really did a number on people's comfort with kind of like sharing deep things about themselves. I think the way that even social media is set up these days, there's aesthetic that people are wanting to put out into the world. There's a certain image of, you know, I'm powerful, I'm steady, I'm stable, I'm confident. And if I'm talking about things that I'm worried about, if I'm telling you about my fears or my insecurities, that goes against this image that I'm putting out into the world. And a lot of times people are going to be secretive, regardless of if you're an adult, a teen, or even an elementary school person, because we've fallen into this matrix that like our avatar, right?
Is that's the word I was looking for. The avatar.
Avatar is what we, is our lifeline. Like how much are we creating, an avatar that is attractive, that is going to get the likes, that is going to be go viral. So when you, the original question is, why are people relying on AI and ChatGPT more? One, because I don't want to be rejected. I don't want people to abandon me. I don't want to be humiliated or embarrassed at like,
at a topic or subject or something.
Exactly. And I also don't want people to see that soft belly, because sometimes there's a history of me showing that sensitivity and vulnerability, and people can be vultures. They can just pick at that stuff until there's nothing left.
I think that AI definitely gives us a false sense of security and connection too, right? Like it does do a lot of like validating or approving. And remembering that, though the computer used for AI is like a supercomputer, like huge, has lots of information, ChatGPT is a language model. So it, really the way that it works is that it identifies patterns in language and puts that information together to provide you with an answer.
So simplify that a little bit, Tyler, for like, tell us what that is. Like, what's, who's behind it and what's behind it?
When well, there is a computer, but it's like the more that we interact with AI, the more data that it's given, right? So we're providing it with language, and it basically like takes pattern recognition and identifies how that language is put together to provide you with an answer. So if I ask chat, to give me an example of counseling techniques. Mm-hmm. It will base that on the patterns that it recognizes around mm-hmm. counseling techniques and put mm-hmm. that together. That's yeah. not knowledge
that he has to sell.
This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace. Let's start 2026 with a hard truth. There's no perfect time to build the future you secretly dream of, and there's no time to waste. With support from a Talkspace therapist, you can make this the year you bravely go out and grab what you need from life, whether that's outer rewards or inner peace. Just go to Talkspace.com to be matched with a licensed online therapist. You can start messaging with your therapist right away and schedule live virtual sessions over video, audio, or chat. Your Talkspace therapist can help you create personalized strategies for making the changes and achieving the goals most important to you. Talkspace accepts most insurance with an average copay of $15, and most insured members have a $0 copay. No insurance? No problem. Get $80 off your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com and save $80 with code SPACE80. That's SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
New knowledge, it's just a repetition.
But it's not even necessarily like factual knowledge either. So mm-hmm. there also has to be this like research
yeah.
and like confirmation of what is actually there. And I think that people kind of just get caught up in like a quick answer mm-hmm. that there's not really, that people do believe that like AI is smart.
Yeah, it's smart. So, and it's like a bot itself. Like yeah. It yeah. could think and function itself. And also like the safety that I think people feel that it brings to it.
Yeah.
To what we're talking about. It's the sense of like, you know, this is safe. This is like something that I can count on. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. This is something that's going to deliver back to me what I say. And if you think about how when the way it's being promoted to be used.
Yeah. Not
also,
a lot of parameters.
There's
around,
not
like,
a lot of
appropriate.
Exactly. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So yeah. if you need something, hey, do chat. If I want to know how to interact with this guy or this girl, like I can put that on there. But to your point, it's describing a pattern.
Right.
It doesn't. Mm-hmm. It's not guaranteed that this person's going to respond.
Right.
Exactly.
Or
that, how
what
I.
What they're saying is like factual advice.
Exactly.
There's no like consideration for who you are as a person. Mm-hmm. There's no ability to like empathize with your specific experience.
Exactly.
Or understanding. So there is that like emotional piece that's missing that really you can only get from human interaction.
Exactly.
We've definitely gotten away from that.
I think also people need to understand what a fact actually is, because I think True. Because a computer mm-hmm. and we've often been taught that technology mm-hmm. gives us information that can be trusted. Yeah. I think people assume that whatever is spit out from there is a fact,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
Is something that is observable by multiple people that came from a organic source, mm-hmm. but they don't realize like what you're saying, that it is a collection of mm-hmm. information that is out on the internet. And we know the internet
right,
is
art, a has access to
exactly.
right, the internet is a wide, like I think about like an ocean mm-hmm. and sometimes what was in the ocean, right, is like fish and mm-hmm. coral and plants mm-hmm. and all the other stuff, but it's also a lot of pollution, a lot of things yeah. that we threw in there, right? Cups and bottles and trash,
racism,
which is kind of like
discrimination,
which is just like the internet,
exactly.
right? Like there's a lot of information that people just threw into there and mm-hmm. that is kind of rolling around yeah. in the mix. And ChatGPT, because it's not necessarily has the discernment of understanding this is an organic source versus this might be less organic, it just kind of gives you a summary of all of mm-hmm. those things in the voice and tone that it is kind of matched to you.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's where algorithms and all that stuff go into play, is that like, oh, what do 14-year-olds in your area, in your, what's mm-hmm. it called? System yeah. in your country say about these particular things. Mm-hmm. And that's what's going to yeah. be out there.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think also, this particular mm-hmm. case with the 16-year-old yeah. was very heartbreaking for me, because I mean, I have like family members who have died by suicide, mm-hmm. but some of the details around like instructions that AI mm-hmm. gave were just sickening.
Yeah.
Like, there were some details about or his parents, some of the lawsuit states that OpenAI encouraged him to pick a specific time where he wouldn't be interrupting other people, discouraged him from sharing with his family members.
Mm-hmm. Help him write a note.
That is, I just think about how isolating that must have been for him. You're going to this resource crying out for help, and it is further like pushing isolating you into isolation. That's just so dangerous to me, and I wonder how like parents can even have those types of conversations or even see signs of that. The way that his parents described him was that like his mental health declined over the year that he was interacting with OpenAI, right? So perhaps there were some things there that they could have seen, but also there was clear instruction. He was following clear instructions
from what he thought was a factual source.
Even being able to like see that. So how do you think that you can even support people who maybe experience suicidality or thinking about it? Any signs or things that you all can encourage people to look out for?
I think it's a couple of things. I think it's a little bit tricky, but I think one thing that parents can also look out for is if you notice that your child, who you know them to be at their baseline, and what I mean by baseline, like their normal affect, their normal discussion stuff they used to be into, if that slowly start to decrease, just start to have conversation. There's nothing wrong with it, like making sure you do a check-in. Yeah. I'm all about doing a check-in with your kid, you know? Also, for the parents, it's two ways with kids too. Not every working parent, if you're working to provide for your family, you know what I mean? Checking in with your kid and your kid also empathize and see that, you know, you're not accessible to them. So they tend to not be so open. So one thing I say is that make the time and the curiosity to just check in with your kid, no matter how busy you are.
Keyword curiosity, right? Yeah. I think that many times with working with parents and their kids, I find that when there's a shift in their mental health, that'll often show up as like behaviors. You're acting out in school. You're not doing well in school. You're not doing your assignments. You're withdrawn. You're not hanging out with the family. And I think that sometimes parents can get very fixated on the behavior.
Yeah, or like, become accusatory.
Yes. And like that, like you're, and not even in a way that is like insensitive. I think perhaps it can feel insensitive, but I don't know that it's intentional. I think starts more so concerning. It's just like you're a disruption to some things. And taking the approach of curiosity and checking into like what is actually going on that has shifted your behavior versus being fixated on like you need to get better grades.
Right. You need to get back on track.
Right in school, get back on track.
Yeah.
I think that,
and also having patience, because sometimes your kid won't have an answer for you. Exactly. Which is why I think they also go to OpenAI and ChatGPT is because they're trying to search for answers during a time when there's a lot of uncertainty. There's brain fog. There's a discomfort of like what I'm experiencing. And so I'm trying to understand it from someone who I feel like won't judge me, who can give me multiple like scenarios or situations. Yeah. Because at times even a parent has a singular focus, or like they only have one lane that they've walked versus, you know, ChatGPT and AI, it feels like it gives you multiple paths to explore. But I even think about something that you were saying, Tyler, about how the OpenAI had given them like a script. I think that if you would have substituted OpenAI for a friend, the difference is the friend probably would have given maybe like some advice that was maybe not helpful, like, or maybe like, you know, but eventually it would have gotten to a point where the friend would have said something to someone. Because how often do we hear stories of like, the client was confessed suicide, that they wanted to kill themselves, and the friend told the mom, someone else, told their mom, who then contacted. Like, AI doesn't have the ability, or at least is not set up to reach out to someone if it reaches a certain threshold.
And maybe that's a safe. I think that's what they're calling for.
That's they're definitely asking one of those safeguards. Yes, but it's also like it's not going to beat the human touch of being able to.
You can't do the empathy,
because it's like if I'm calling you.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And a human is saying, hey, your daughter, your son just told me that he wanted, mm-hmm. he has a plan to want to end his life, versus AI sends you an email or a text message or something. Like, yeah. there's going to be a certain different level of response.
I think that's tricky too, because mm-hmm. the harsh reality is that someone who is committed to wanting to end their life will often not say anything to anyone.
Exactly.
And so it is really tricky to, like, you don't really get that window of opportunity often.
Often,
someone
yeah.
has already decided that that's
this
what
is what they were
going to
do.
Yeah.
I think the troubling thing about this particular case is that the AI told him how to be successful.
Sure. Yes, because most humans won't tell you unless you're going into a certain part of the internet or you're seeking that information. Yeah. Will tell you how
anybody,
to do
it. If you're going into a part of the internet to seeking that, your search engines would tend eventually to give a warning to,
or at least that's how it's supposed to. That's how we're supposed to. Because I think about like Tumblr back in the day, like there were people exactly like I think about when they had the eating disorder pages.
Yeah,
they had, like, there's a lot of things. If you're looking for certain information, you will find it. But the difference is that you have to search in multiple arenas when you were doing Google or my Bing or whatever. But ChatGPT, literally, it's one place and it's giving you everything you want.
How to do it.
Yeah,
but also, to talk about like the friends part that you were saying, Jesus, the teenage language these days is very interesting.
They make me very
because casual. Because they're casual. They're the, like, if they get angry at each other, go kill yourself.
Yeah.
But don't even, they may not know the sensitivity of their friend that they actually are at that point. Or even you get so angry, you encourage your friend to actually do it. Because if you yourself are in a bad space, I think we live in a climate where to me, it seems like teenagers depend on themselves and trust adults less.
Yes. Sure.
And I think that's a problem on our part.
As that adults,
are you talking at your children, at your child, instead of talking to them?
Yeah.
And talking at your kid, let me give an example. It looks like, I need you to do this. You are not doing this. You need to listen. This is how this house runs. This is what we do here.
Here you are being manipulative again.
Exactly.
Like, how often are you going to say you're going to kill yourself? How often are you going to show up this way? Like, I don't care about what the therapist said about this thing, that your room isn't clean, you haven't washed the dishes. Like, I need you to show up in this space. That is
it. And then how do you talk to your child? How does the other end look like?
And Stephanie, your example is even a bit more advanced than many people experience.
Exactly.
Because you're talking about someone who perhaps has access or is already participating in a therapeutic service.
Exactly.
Like, I think there are many kids, especially ones that look like us, who are like just sliding under the radar.
They are.
And that often looks like the room is dirty all the time. You're never coming out of
the room.
You need
to clean the shit up. You need to stop doing this.
You're never coming out of the room. Mm-hmm. You're not interacting with people really when they're around. Mm-hmm. Like, those are signs that like people don't really think about. That not necessarily signs that say like this person is going to harm themselves, but definitely signs that like something
they're not in a good headspace.
That their mental health is perhaps not in a good space.
Yeah.
And those things, isolation, lack of community, lack of connection, increase the probability of their interest in that.
Exactly.
Because that's true. Exactly. I think it's also fair to say, since we're talking about suicide, is that that behavior, that presentation that you're saying of being isolated, being withdrawn, being sad, is not always going to be what shows up before somebody attempts suicide or looking to complete. Because usually what happens is that they're now more, have a lot more energy. Now they're more talking. Now they're maybe even like, hey, I remember you said you really liked that coat that I wore last year. You know what? You can have it.
Yeah.
You know, like, oh, like I'm going to throw this party. You guys should come over. Where, you know, there's all these things here. Like, let's just have a good like end of the summer send off. That kind of like shift in I'm happy, I'm this, is where you have to be a little bit concerned for someone who has been depressed and isolated and reporting suicide ideation, because now they have the energy to complete their plan.
Yeah.
Usually depressed people are so depressed and have a lack of energy, and their body feels so heavy and mm-hmm. so out of it that they don't have the energy to try yeah. to complete mm-hmm. Their suicide attempt.
Exactly.
But so that's another thing for parents to be looking out for. If they notice a shift in their kid's behavior, don't just readily assume, oh, they're better now.
Right.
Oh, okay, cool. We're back to
still
how
stay
things
engaged.
Are
yeah.
and, scheduled. And
curious. Yeah. I would also say
But can that, we give an example of what talking to your kid curious sounds like, just like we yeah. gave what talking at them look like? What does talking to them actually looks like?
Who wants to be the kid?
I could be the kid. You know I'm good at being the
okay.
kid.
Okay, and so who about to be the adult? You about to be the adult?
Sure.
All right. Ready? Action.
I got a call from your school today. What's going on? Your teacher said that you were not paying attention, or that like none of your assignments were done today.
This podcast is supported by The Real Real. Meet Christine. She loves shopping. And this is the sound of fashion overload. Too many fabulous things, not enough space. So Christine started selling with The Real Real.
I've always loved collecting designer pieces. Gucci bags, Prada heels. But my style keeps evolving. Selling with The Real Real? Game changer. I earn more and they do everything.
Seriously, just drop off your items or schedule a pickup. We handle the photos, descriptions, pricing, even shipping. You just sit back and watch your items sell fast to our 40 million members.
And I get peace of mind knowing I earn more selling with The Real Real than anywhere else.
Exactly. That's the sound of your closet working for you. The Real Real. Earn more, save time, sell fast. And only for the month of January, earn up to $550 extra when you sell with The Real Real. That's right, up to $550 extra. Go to TheRealReal.com to get started. Earn up to $550 extra this month at TheRealReal.com. Terms apply.
Oh, I want to check in. That's not usually like you.
I'm good. I just forgot. I went to bed late last night, but I just forgot.
Just last night, but the teacher said this has been going on for a couple of weeks.
Well, not a couple of weeks. I'll just miss a couple of assignments, just one or two. But I'll get to it. Don't worry about it. I'll get it done.
Okay. What else has been going on?
Nothing much. Just doing what I need to do.
Doing what you need to do. What does that mean?
Doing what I need to do. What you want me to do? What I need to do.
Well, what do you want to do? Hey.
Well, you know, I mean, me and TJ got into this fight, and it's been irritating for the last couple of weeks, but we're fine. It's fine. I'll get the work done, but it definitely did not make me feel good about myself.
Well,
he said some mean things, and we were done with it.
TJ said what now?
TJ said some mean things, but we don't mind. We don't talk about it. Don't go there.
Well, then we can do a stop there. I think that was a perfect example of you have to sometimes just stick with it with yeah, a teenager exactly. and with a kid, and honestly, even with an adult.
Yeah, exactly.
Because it feels like you're pulling teeth. People yeah, are like, yeah. Well, why do I feel like I had to pull teeth? Because it's not often comfortable to come to someone and let them know that mm-hmm. you're at your wit's end.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. But also the relationship with the parent had to be established.
Yes.
So you can't switch up and decide now you want to be closer to your child and be want to listen. But if
after
being absent, if the emotional trust and the safety is not, it was ruptured and is not established, then there's going to need more patience.
Mm-hmm.
There's
going to be more repair, right?
Yeah, like, more accountability yeah. for mm-hmm. ownership. Because a lot of time as parents, we don't feel like we should take. There's a reason why I behave that way. There's a yeah. reason why I was this way. No, there's explain to your kid and also be open to apologizing
yeah,
for
mistake.
The way that you show up. Then your kids will start to see the humanness in you mm-hmm. and not this hierarchy of like you above, you the tower. Mm-hmm. And you guess there is a
and
hierarchy.
I'm burdensome but, and I can't problem. Show up in a way
exactly.
because this is too much. Because I think that for the kids that I've worked with, mm-hmm. they feel like they have to be responsible for taking care of the parents' feelings, mm-hmm. meaning yeah. that I don't want to be the last straw that breaks my mom's back or my dad's back. We're already dealing with financial issues where my other siblings yeah. mm-hmm. are, you know, being disruptive at school. So mm-hmm. I don't feel like yeah. I can say anything because I don't want to be a burden. I don't want to add any
I
extra
think that
stress.
Definitely happens when parents are a little bit more emotionally reliant on their kids.
Or yeah,
put a lot of pressure on their kids.
That
to,
part,
like,
because there's the other end of the spectrum.
Yeah, or like satisfaction in their life.
Yeah. Because there's the other end of the spectrum where the kid feel like, they don't care about me. They don't even notice if I come and go.
Yeah.
Or they just want me to do what they want me to do. So, mm-hmm. like, there's that. So
yeah.
I think before, you know, the role play that Tyler and I did is based on an emotional safety that was already established sure. with a parent and a mm-hmm. child. But be very mindful that if you want to rebuild the relationship repair that Tyler talked yeah. about, do need to happen if you want your kid to start being the source. Like, yeah. I think parents stray away from being the primary source that your kid go to instead of their friends or OpenAI being the primary source.
Or therapist.
We lost older therapy. Yeah. We lost accountability of us being the primary source yeah. as parents. So now it's OpenAI. So now it's their friends.
Mm-hmm.
And
TikTok.
Even the therapist, sometimes it takes a while to build rapport with the yeah. youth.
Mm-hmm.
So also noticing that as well. So I will say that to avoid things like this, where kids are dependent less on technology, less on the social
the
media
or
outside source, look at what's happening at home.
Mm-hmm.
I am the believer, I don't care what nobody says, is that it's not the teacher's fault why the kid is acting the F up. It's not the coach why this... What's going on at home?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
What happened
yeah.
when they leave that door?
Mm-hmm.
If there's no security in the home, outside ain't gonna give them shit.
But yeah. I think that we talk about this quite frequently, the
yeah.
community aspect. I
yeah.
think that there is definitely a correlation between like the loss of community and
yeah.
like how people raise and have responsibility for their kids,
mm-hmm.
right? Like there is, we've lost the village aspect.
Yes.
And so like, at some points, if I couldn't talk to my parents about it, there was definitely another adult in my life that I knew
that you
I could say some shit to that
yeah.
was not going to perhaps get back to my parents, but mm-hmm. I was going to, like, if I was doing something wrong, they were going to call me out, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, they weren't going to encourage me to do the wrong things,
yeah.
but they were going to hold space for me to, like, talk about it in a non-judgmental way and
yeah.
check me when I needed to be checked.
Yeah.
That wasn't my parent. So it's not even that like the parent, there's kind of the primary source has been lost by the parent, but I think it's more so that there's no community. The
yeah.
parents don't have the same support, the
accessibility
same
or support. Yeah. yeah.
Like,
which would then lead them to be more stressed
yeah.
out.
Especially community of color.
To, mm-hmm. you know? Yes. Yes. Like I do think the people, people of color, Black people can, I think honestly, Black people suffer from the like breaking of community a bit more
yes.
than people of color and white folks.
Yeah.
Sure. Because I feel like we are pack people. We're community people.
Yeah, yes. Like, yes. No, yeah. we are a community, but I'm thinking like going back to how like our society and how certain like franchises have disrupted like the Black community
True.
To like there being not a lot of reliance on yeah. things mm-hmm. outside of your small
yeah.
circle.
Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. So it's like you don't have the best relationship with your sister. So then your kid doesn't have their aunt as a person,
as a
to
resource.
Be able to talk
yeah.
to.
Right. For sure.
Unfortunately, your brother might have been in the mm-hmm. prison system. So now right. your son doesn't have his
uncle.
To yep. be able to mm-hmm. kind of reach out to because, you know, dad, you know, is not always in the best place
right.
for me to yeah. talk to. But I wanted to actually take a slightly different perspective because I was thinking about this on the drive in. The reason why teenagers, I think, don't have the language and the empathy around these sensitive topics, we do too much joking around
okay,
like
that's definitely
like we do way too much joking around sensitive topics. Like
yeah. Yeah.
when a kid comes and crying, you're over here making fun of you're a crybaby. What's yeah. wrong with you now?
Yeah.
Like here, look at him being a little sissy.
Yeah.
Like look at her being just like too much. Like
oh, she's being
such
a
drama queen.
Yeah.
Right. Like we
yeah.
do these things where we minimize and label
yeah.
and invalidate our children
yeah.
in a like a very kind of like humiliation ritual. S type of way.
Yeah.
Why would they come back to us to talk about I want to kill myself or I feel really ugly if you are over here making fun of me and saying I'm ugly?
Yeah.
If
yeah.
you're talking about my hair makes me look like Sojourner Truth. Like if you're
yeah.
saying all of these crazy
things
about me.
Yeah. yeah.
And it's a joke. that's my psyche. That's my confidence. That's my internal framework.
Well, baby, we grew up in the DMV, okay? Jonan.
Jonan.
Like, you had to really have a tough skin. And it was very much like...
I think that's
like
the same thing with our culture, too.
It was very much join in or get ate the fuck up.
That's a real thing.
Straight up. But I think that, like, going back to that community aspect, I think that we hear a lot about, like, suicide prevention. There's, like, foundations. There's walks. But
all
I think
these
that a big part of suicide prevention is having more conversations about it.
Yeah.
I really want our community to be free from this idea that suicide is white people's shit.
It's not.
There are so many of our black teenagers, our black males, our LGBTQ teens that are very, at very high
sensitive
risk.
Sensitive.
Yes.
To it.
Right? And that is oftentimes the main factor there is lack of connection, lack of community.
Or acceptance or identity.
Also lack of safety. Because I also think about challenging this idea that, oh, suicide is for white folks. What about the slaves that jumped off the ship that didn't want to?
Thank you.
Come over here.
I
mean, I know you have, but I'm saying it's still suicide.
It is.
So like, yes, because of then I don't have any safety. I don't know. There's no certainty on what's to come. Like,
suicide don't have a race or color or creed.
That's
pretty
much
what we're saying.
And
what we're saying is that we are more prone and we are prone to suicide and or suicidal thoughts. So the way that it also comes, we didn't cover this, but we can, is that self-harming behavior is also part of an onset of suicidal thoughts.
Sure.
So, you know, what is self-harm? It's really hurting yourself to a point where you are trying to relieve pain internally.
You're not trying to
so
die.
When your kid come to you and or when you may notice some different scratches or whatever, or they express having these thoughts, do not condemn them and saying what's wrong with you or why you're doing that. Stop doing that to yourself. This is a sign for you to say, okay, we need to talk to someone, and because I could tell you're in a lot of pain. And usually you want to start by saying, it's like, hey, I hear about this, I don't understand it, but I think there might be a lot going on. And do you want to talk to me? If not, are you open to talking to someone?
Yeah.
So just be very mindful around, like, suicide don't have a color. It doesn't have a creed. We as black people, especially now, are very more prone to it. Yeah. And we can't turn a blind eye to it.
Yeah. And I think that really being sensitive and, like, curious, like, when you've had a tragic experience in your family, like suicide, it can be, like, initially, like, everybody's trying to come together, kind of figure out what's going on. And then, like, as time goes, I think people kind of just go back to their respective corners.
And then
needs to be more, like, I look at suicide prevention as, like, policy change.
Yes.
Like, people would be less interested in unaliving themselves if they had housing and food.
Thank you.
If they had a sustainable ways to live life, if they were
accessibility
not, like,
to resources.
If they had access to resources. And so, like, that being on a more, like, systemic level, being in community with people, having conversations, like,
having third spaces.
Yes, having things to do outside of this rat race of, like, I just go to work and I just go to school. And, like, if I'm not, there can be a lot of pressure around the idea that school is the only thing that I have to achieve. And if I'm not good at that, what am I really here for?
And then you have a lot of them who finish school and realize, like, this is not for me.
Yeah.
And I'm not fulfilled in that. Mm-hmm. So I think part of, to your point around, I think as a community, especially in the era that we're living in now, we have to start creating resources for ourselves as a community.
Yeah.
And I think we are slowly starting to do that, whether it's housing, whether it's farming, whether it's accessibility, whether it's creating therapeutic spaces.
Yeah.
I think we all, the three of us, do a great job at, you know, doing community work and activists and creating spaces for our community to actually want to help. So there is a part where silence don't have to be alone, and just understand that as we were talking about OpenAI, there's no privacy for OpenAI, just so we're clear, compared to having a privacy talking to a therapist.
Yeah.
Your rights are private when you come and talk to a professional. Mm-hmm. So OpenAI ain't got no privacy. They can use that same resource, all that stuff you give to them, they can use it to train a different bot.
There's no safeguards.
Yeah, those datas belong to them. It don't belong to you. So don't think for 1 minute that your stuff is not going to be shared. It's secure. But if you talk to a human or a therapist, yeah, we are secure.
Yeah.
And then also, you know, therapists ourselves, like we also don't need to be dependent on AI ourselves around. I know that's a new thing and a different topic, but being very mindful on how we ourselves use it when it comes to working with clients.
Yeah.
And also going back to what we know and what we're trained in.
Yeah, I think that, like, aside from the thing that we talk about, brain rot, right? Like, wanting to continue to be able to use your brain for things and not relying on AI for small things, but also the environmental impact is not talked about a lot.
Yeah, can you talk about that?
Yes,
because you educated me about that. You and my child, yeah.
A ton of water.
Yeah.
The supercomputers are often built in very rural, poor, minority filled areas of the United States where it's poisoning people's water, it's killing folks,
using up a lot of electricity. So a lot of folks who are having high bills.
Very much environmental racism. And that is something that's the part that is not talked about often. I think we hear so much about how beneficial AI can be to us and how it can make things convenient. And yes, it can. I would love to just be able to, like, not have to write another clinical note in my life.
Right.
But I also have ethical concerns about the integrity of my clients' experiences.
This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace. Let's start 2026 with a hard truth. There's no perfect time to build the future you secretly dream of, and there's no time to waste. With support from a Talkspace therapist, you can make this the year you bravely go out and grab what you need from life, whether that's outer rewards or inner peace. Just go to Talkspace.com to be matched with a licensed online therapist. You can start messaging with your therapist right away and schedule live virtual sessions over video, audio, or chat. Your Talkspace therapist can help you create personalized strategies for making the changes and achieving the goals most important to you. Talkspace accepts most insurance with an average copay of $15, and most insured members have a $0 copay. No insurance? No problem. Get $80 off your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com and save $80 with code SPACE80. That's SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
Where's this information going? How is it being used to train other bots, right?
Exactly.
What is happening with this information outside of me wanting to use it for my clinical notes?
Exactly.
And also, I think AI does not take into account the multicultural aspects of, you know, the user that is using them and what would, like, factors that you would need to consider when it comes to A, resources, tools, interventions, all of those different arenas.
Yeah.
So you want to be careful about how reliant you are on the information as both a consumer, like from a client's perspective, as well as if you're a therapist, because it's coming from white, cisgendered, male, most likely kind of experience, like most information that's out there.
Yeah.
And I think another question that we had, just to kind of wrap it up, it's like, well, what role should parents or educators have in teaching kids healthy AI use? I think that we need to take a lot of responsibility here. Meaning, when I was growing up, they taught us how to use the internet, like how to find information and rule out information that was not helpful, that was not credible, that was not valid. And I don't think that we pay as much attention to that with how quickly technology is just blowing up into the world. Yeah,
because everything is so instant, right?
1,000%. I think parents also need to be much more informed of what your child's internet usage is. I think there's a lot of parents that are too lenient or just too blind about what's going on outside.
Wrapped up in their own stuff.
But also just like are not aware of what's happening with your kid, not aware about what's happening with your close ones, right? Like, school life is really, really integral in a teen's life. It's a culture within the culture.
It's not just about going to school to learn books.
So you need to know who your kids' friends are, or if they have kids or friends, if they are being bullied, what is the safe place that they go to in school? What is their relationship with their teachers? Do they have one person in the school that is a safe base that you are having a connection with? Like, it does seem like a lot. And I tell my moms and my dads that I work with, parenting is not easy. It requires you to commit and recommit, even when your child is not showing up in ways that make committing easy. Mm-hmm. And so when your kid is depressed, when your young child is just feeling like they're doing too much, or that they're constantly causing you stress, it does require a higher level of patience in order for you to kind of stick to it with your kid. And so that's something that I always want to emphasize, is just like, you need to monitor in an empathetic way.
Also with monitoring is that it's not the time to say we're not tech savvy as parents. We got to learn. Apple be giving some courses you can go research online, Google, Android.
Yeah,
so you can learn. You know, there's a lot. And then the FBI do put a lot of stuff for parents to look out for, different code and wording and language that teenagers use that you're not privy to. You know, when Sophie was in school, one thing I did, I kept up with the language. Because I paid for the bill. So
exactly.
And if I pay for it, I'm going to let you know. I didn't even go behind her back. Just know at any time I can access your phone. Keep clear of that. I learned about different apps that she was using that were hidden ones. She didn't even know I knew. But I got that off the FBI list that she was using, and she did have that. But be very mindful that kids have like language that they use. Keep up to date with that. Google those languages. Learn how to use the computer. Learn how to use AI yourself. Learn what it means. Like, she's the one who educated me. You know, first I was skeptical about using AI, and I still am, because I like my brain to still be active and function. But I also did not know how it was being used, the amount of water that it needs to be. Like, I didn't know all of that until you and her let me know. So there's things as parents that we do have to get with technology and keep up with technology, because that's the way of the world that has been moving. And now it's going at a faster speed that we can't keep up with, but don't be ignorant to not teach yourself about it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I think that there are some ways to like also model, but teach your kids to be curious as well.
Yeah.
I think that a lot of very strict and like authoritative households will teach like blind following.
Yeah.
Like, I'm going with whatever the crowd says, or whether the authority in the room says. And that also can lead people to listening to AI without conversation or without curiosity about like where is this source coming from.
But I think this is a really great conversation about the importance of, you know, the relationship between parent and child and all the different responsibilities and all the different things that goes into parenting a healthy, well-rounded child, but also talking about suicide and just things to look out for.
And the new way that is becoming accessible.
Yes. And I do want to be clear that like this conversation about parent and child is not to say that the situation with the 16-year-old had anything
could have been avoided, or
right? It had nothing.
This is more of like a general conversation around prevention, like
around
how
prevention, and
we're diligent in providing community where our teens are not looking to AI for that.
Exactly.
Comfort.
Yeah, and also some of the things that we talked about is not secluded only to teenagers and adolescents. Yep. A lot of the symptoms that we talked about that as it relates to somebody who is suicidal can be seen. What's it called? With adults, can be seen with men. Men, women,
college, women, all of that.
This can be a one size fits all type of situation.
Yeah.
So we're going to move over to talk about our listener letter.
Cool.
My
favorite part of this. I love this segment.
Okay. So this one was, has therapy changed your relationship with your parents? I used to have an anxiety-filled, toxic relationship with my mother, where I walked on eggshells and endured her cruelty. But now I'm basically no contact. Just 2 emails in 2 years and a brief, awkward moment at my grandmother's party where I refused her hug. I feel guilty about it, but I'm also much happier without her in my life, which is sad in its own way. Has anyone else struggled with the guilt of setting boundaries with a parent?
I thought the initial question, right? Like, mm-hmm. has therapy changed your relationship with your parents? Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. In some ways, great. In some ways, no. Yeah. I think mm-hmm. that for our listener, mm-hmm. perhaps therapy gave her the space to identify with awareness and what her values are mm-hmm. and allowed her to accept that mm-hmm. her values were not the same as her parents. Mm-hmm. That happens quite often. Mm-hmm. And that also will come with other emotions, mm-hmm. guilt, sometimes even shame. I think mm-hmm. that is natural, and we don't have to run from the idea of like, I can't do something because I feel guilty. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Guilt it's tolerable. We can deal with guilt. It will come and go.
Yeah. Girl, I don't know if you're a girl or guy, whatever you go by, okay? I am glad that we were able to give you language, okay? And that's what we do. We are here to give our clients language to, one, know themselves and what actually worked, didn't work. Yeah. And what I'm realizing is that you realize that there's a boundary that you need to keep with your mother right now at this moment that is allowing you to function in your life, that makes you feel healthier, that makes you feel happier. And at any point, that can change as well. So be open to that. When you're ready for that to change, it can change. And going back to, has anyone said boundaries? You know, I don't know if therapy helped me set boundaries with my parents, or I end up setting boundaries with my parents necessarily, because I was changing. I think I've always...
Therapy helped you know yourself.
Exactly. Because mm-hmm. I think I've always had boundaries with my parents. I don't know if I necessarily called it boundaries. They just know, like, okay, well, she ain't gonna do this shit. We just know. We could beat her ass and she still ain't gonna do it. So I think that's always something that... I think as I got older, I did set some strict boundaries with my father and with my mom too, but not as strict with my mom. But it was more in understanding how this is how much I'm emotionally able to give you, and this is how much I'm not.
Yeah.
And I think that's very valid around the fact that setting boundaries is healthy. And at the same time, sometimes clients, I think, can misconstrue what we say with boundaries and end up using boundaries in a way that can be weaponizing and manipulative. Yeah. And that's we're judging in that sense, saying that it's manipulative, but in a way that is working.
Maybe I would say it's working more in a way of avoidance.
There you go.
I think that especially when we think about, again, community, right? Mm-hmm. Like, there is going to be some difficult moments within community, and there is sometimes going to be some harm.
Yes.
And we don't do a lot of relationship repair work.
Exactly.
I think we do with the type of therapy that we do.
Yeah,
but I don't know that everybody is really getting that same service.
Yeah.
And I think it's very Western to prioritize cutting your family off.
Exactly.
It's not necessarily something that I discourage if the relationship is like extremely toxic and harmful, mm-hmm. but it's not something that I would normally lead with either.
Exactly.
Just considering the importance of community and connection. Mm-hmm. I think that sometimes cutting the person off can be the easy route.
Can be the
versus mm-hmm. and like, that's exactly where I was through relationship repair and like get to a space where they're on the same page.
Yeah.
I think sometimes people struggle with that with their parents too, because our parents have their limitations.
Right. Because it seems like to me, and this is my assumption around, maybe mom is not open to taking some accountability to some experiences that this listener has had, that now they feel like they have to set these boundaries to protect themselves, but also acknowledge that these boundaries also have a time stamp of their temporary fixes mm-hmm. and not permanent fix if the pain and the healing still needs to be done with or without the parent.
Yeah. So, and it makes me think a little bit about folks using boundaries as an act of rebellion versus an act of healing.
Yeah.
Right. So mm-hmm. if I'm using it as a way to prove to you that you're not going to have that power that you once mm-hmm. held over me, or mm-hmm. you're not going to make me feel the way that you once made me feel, that is still in service of, I guess, the parent of that person. You're still, in a way, making decisions to get that other person to, you know, treat you in a particular way.
Yeah.
Which is not necessarily a boundary, right? A boundary is about what we, how we conduct ourselves in order to move us closer to the person that we aspire to be or the experience we're trying to have. Thanks. And so that is difficult when you still are operating in the guise of like wanting the other person to just see you, to understand me, to accept me, to just take me in this way versus like, it's hard for both of us, for me to have to hold you at arm's length in this way, but ultimately it allows me to function better and be more able to come back to interact with you.
Yeah, for sure.
I think this was a healthy and grounding for me kind of conversation around like what, how to use AI or what to look out for, what safeguards or maybe like to hope that they put out there in the future. But, you know, always love talking to you guys and being on the couch. So we are Couch Chronicles and we would love for you to like us on all our platforms. We are on Spotify. We are on Apple. We are on YouTube.
Give us some feedback.
Give us 5-star on Apple and Amazon. We're looking for that. If you like listening to us, subscribe to us. You could also follow us at Couch Chronicle LLC on Instagram. And then we're on YouTube as Couch Chronicles 123 as well.
And so, if you have things that you want us to read on the show or if you have questions for us, feedback, you can also reach us at Couch Chronicles TAD@gmail.com.
Subscribe, subscribe, and follow. Thank you, fam.
Bye, everyone.
Bye.
All
right.
2026 with a hard truth. There's no perfect time to build the future you secretly dream of, and there's no time to waste. With support from a Talkspace therapist, you can make this the year you bravely go out and grab what you need from life, whether that's outer rewards or inner peace. Just go to Talkspace.com to be matched with a licensed online therapist. You can start messaging with your therapist right away and schedule live virtual sessions over video, audio, or chat. Your Talkspace therapist can help you create personalized strategies for making the changes and achieving the goals most important to you. Talkspace accepts most insurance with an average copay of $15, and most insured members have a $0 copay. No insurance? No problem. Get $80 off your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com and save $80 with code SPACE80. That's SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.